And welcome back to Open Lines now, this hour on Coast to Coast AM. Looking forward to chatting with you. We'll take your text and tweets as well. Have you ever been in the right place at the right time? Is it all timing? Is it luck? Is it fate? What do you think it is? Think about that. Email in from Elaine. Listen to this. My former brother-in-law, who passed away a few years ago, and his brother were the opening act Frankie and Johnny for Buddy Holly and Richie Valens in Iowa. They were perturbed when there was no room for them on the plane and that they had to take the bus with Waylon Jennings. Gosh, how about that? Fate stepped in on something like that, I'm sure. Anyways, we'll be back with your calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. So let's do an hour of open lines here. It's always nice to toss them in every once in a while. Let us go to the phones east of the Rockies. Dora is with us in Jersey City. Hey, Dora, welcome to the program.
Thank you, George. George, Buddy Holly, have a band named the Creakers.
One more time.
Buddy Holly, have a band named the Creakers.
The Crickets.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. In 1967... one of them that didn't took the plane was working in Camino Drive, Beverly Hills.
Okay.
The family of Lalo Schifrin, the Mission Impossible composer.
Okay.
So it's how I know. I didn't know nothing about Buddy Holly, but I hear the creaker, and it's how I know his story.
Did you ever listen to his music?
Yes, you was playing, but in Cuba, what we hear was Bill Hay.
Yeah, I mean he was one of a kind, to be sure. Thank you, Frank in Hollywood, Maryland's with us. Hey, Frank, go ahead.
Howdy, George. Glad to be back with you. I didn't get on with Gary. I wanted to ask Gary what was the insurance situation with the families and lawsuits and whatnot. And did you get around to playing O'Donnell by Richie Valens tonight?
We're not going to play. We just had a part of that.
Oh, well, O'Donnell, that was a beautiful song.
Yeah.
When I first got it, I played it 10 times in a row. And then the other thing, did Patsy Cline die in a plane crash in 1959 also?
Patsy Cline.
Check that on your computer that you got there in front of you.
She might have.
I want you to check that because
Tommy will check that.
Yeah, and then Buddy's horn-rimmed glasses. The young guy started wearing those after he died. Peter Asher, Peter and Gordon being one of them. And Gary, when Gary was on the last time, I thought this was a rerun. He stated word for word the same thing that he said last time. I don't know if it was with you or.
No, he was on with Richard Sherrod at the time.
Richard Sherrod, right? Yeah, I remember it very well, about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, that's when his book just had come out.
Right. Great title.
By the way, Patsy died at 30 in a plane crash.
At 30, what date was that?
That was in 1963.
Oh, 63. I'm sorry. Then I thought it was 59 also. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Frank. Thank you, Tom, for that, by the way. Charlie's in Amarillo, Texas, west of the Rockies. Welcome to the show. Hi, Charlie.
Yeah, good evening, or it's good morning.
Yeah, exactly.
Been listening to you for a long time, George, being a musician myself.
Are you? Thank you. What kind of music do you play, Charlie?
Well, I played country and western, but I started as a rockabilly artist along with Buddy Holly over at the Norman Petty Studios in Clovis, New Mexico. As a matter of fact, Buddy played on some of my early records, and we were on the same record company of Coral Records.
Did you like him?
Oh yes, yes. Buddy was a nice guy and very, very talented. And a lot of his first hit records, they all came out of the Norman Petty Studios there in Clovis, New Mexico. And he played on my original version of Sugar Time. that I had a hit on in the McGuire Sisters.
Jeez, oh, you know them all. Songs. You sound like Johnny Cash.
Oh, really?
Anybody ever tell you that?
Well, I used to be a DJ, and I'm retired, of course, from that now. Being at my age, I'm pretty well retired from just about anything. But Buddy was—he was just 1 year younger than me, I believe, if I'm correct on that. But I missed Gary. I tried to get on while he was on there, but didn't get on. And I'm not familiar with his book, but I'm going to be sure and pick it up. And
yeah, it's a good read.
His story. There's a lot of stories out about Buddy Holly. As a matter of fact, there's one out that a young writer by the name of Kai Cushenberry wrote. It was actually a biography about myself and my connection with the music industry back in those days. And he went into a lot of the Buddy Holly theories and stuff like that. Not so much, you know, the plane crash, but his career and connection. But yeah, and Waylon Jennings and Tommy Allsup, all those guys, you know, were from this part of the country. Waylon's from Lubbock, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew all those guys, too. And I remember the day that that happened. We were driving back from a job in Midland, Texas, and we heard it on the radio coming back.
Were you in shock when you heard it? Yeah.
Oh, Lord, couldn't believe it. Just could not believe it. He had a kind of a dry wit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He had a good, you know, he was a good humor guy, but he could make you laugh, too. And he was very talented way before his time.
I bet the radio stations played their music like forever after the crash, huh?
Oh, well, yeah, you know, I wouldn't know the money part of it, but Buddy Holly is more popular today than he was, you know, back
when he was alive.
When he was alive, he just, you know, and more especially in Europe. I mean, you mentioned Buddy Holly over there, and they'll bow down, you know. So,
jeez,
he was a great artist, and I'm not familiar. I do agree with Gary's, you know, his stories in his book that he was talking about on your show about the crash. I certainly agree with him on how it happened and who was to blame and all that. So
sad story.
And I don't believe any of the conspiracy things that came out of it. And
I just need you to say one thing for us. Just say, hi, everybody, I'm Johnny Cash.
Hi, everybody, I'm Johnny Cash.
Perfect. Thanks, Charlie. Tom, we take text and tweets. What do you have for us? sounded just like him, didn't he?
You're going to ask him that. From Sandy in West Palm Beach, do you have a favorite poem you might have learned in school?
From Robert Frost, The Road Not Taken. Whose woods these are, I think I know. And it goes on and on and on, but it's a great poem.
You have the whole thing memorized?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Just about.
Good stuff.
Okay. That's it?
That's what you wanted to know.
Barry in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Old buddy, old pal.
You knocked me out, buddy. I'll tell you what. Listen, I'll tell you what. I'm not Johnny Cash.
No, you're not. But you do sing, because we had you singing on this show when my ratings plummeted.
Oh, listen, George, when you said it, well, Barry, when you started that song, I had 6 million listeners, but now I have only three.
Three people.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But let me tell you real quick.
And two of them were your relatives.
As a matter of fact, you're exactly right. God, you got a great memory, but you do. You have a terrific memory, George. I mean, 15, 20, 30 years ago, you can remember things just like they were yesterday.
Well, knock on wood. Let's hope it stays that way, huh?
Oh, well, at your age, it will, because you're old enough now where you're not going to catch any of those things.
It's all my supplements I take.
As a matter of fact, I do, too, and Carnivora, and Dr. Wallach and Ben Fuchs, a great guest, and lots of good information that they put out.
They're amazing. Ben's going to be on next Tuesday, as a matter of fact. He's got some great info.
But listen, I was just telling Tommy that my brother-in-law was born and raised in Charles City, Iowa. And he and his parents and sister and brother used to go to Spirit Lake, Iowa in the summer. This was in the 50s. And they said that truly there was a type of aura when you were in the town, even if there was no conversation being had about Buddy Holly or the Bopper and Richie. And he ended up building a 3,000-square-foot log cabin right there in Spirit Lake. He lives in Des Moines.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a good story about everything that happened with the deal. And, of course, I'm 76, so I remember it vividly. And it was kind of a true shock to me and my friends. It was almost like a sinking feeling in your heart.
Do you remember their music?
Oh, good gosh. What do you think?
Of course. You would have been, what, 16, 17 years old?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Me and my sister were bopping to the music. I'm telling you, we could dance and listen to that music and shoot Jerry Lee Lewis and the rest of those crazy characters.
I remember Chantilly Lace because it's such a different kind of a song.
Oh, sure. You know? And it was...
Hey, baby. That guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a novelty song, but it was such a great message and the lyrics and the music behind it. That's what makes a great song. You know as well as I do.
Oh, I know. And you know what? We've lost that.
Oh, yes. You know, George, I disagree with you. I think lots of the crooners, Sinatra, especially Dean Martin, he's my all-time favorite.
Well, I mean, today's music, it's not like it used to be. And it's not because I'm older. It's just that today's music, the words don't mean anything, do they?
Well, I get your point. No kidding. Music has evolved. And, I mean, you know, country music anymore is nothing but rock and roll with a twang.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know of a song I've heard, a new song, that you want to just learn how to sing it.
Yes. It's a lot of rehashing of other songs. They just jumble the words around to make it one of their songs, and it sounds a lot like the ones that 30 years ago.
And we've got a lot of talented young artists. They're very good at what they do, and, you know, when you see those people sing on American Idol or, you know, The Voice and things like that, they're good.
Oh, listen, Lady Gaga, for heaven's sakes, great, balls of fire. That woman can light up a place, and with the backup band and orchestra behind her, you know as well as I do because you're a performer, that's the horn section, when you got a saxophone man that knows what he's doing, good, great.
You got that right. Thanks, Barry. Keep in touch. Too bad you're not living out by Everett, Washington for our live show. You would have loved this one coming up. Let's go to Emily. Welcome to the program. Hi, Emily. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm all excited about the wall barrier because now that they were always good in history, but now that they've got this way of X-raying the ground and imaging underneath the crust like the Israelis do to stop the Palestinian tunnels, and they have that seismograph stuff for the earthquakes, then you can detect people even tunneling before they ever get to your wall. Now walls and barriers are better than they ever were.
Yeah, but I'm not a wall and barrier fan.
Well, you know who did defeat the walls, though, was Attila the Hun. Because when he was sieging a town or a city, instead of doing it terrible like the Romans did Jerusalem, he would take the dead bodies of people who had the plague and just catapult them over the wall.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Now, I have what do you think of Cesar Chavez? Don't you think that now that there's going to be more controlled borders, the things he was trying to do with unionizing the farm workers, not just for money but also for working conditions, and the other thing was the I'm forgetting now.
I can't answer it if you forget it.
The guest worker program.
Mm-hmm.
I think all that would work better now that we're going to have more controlled borders.
Well, don't say we're going to have more controlled borders yet because nothing's happened yet.
I think there's already an improvement because I didn't know that those caravans have been coming for 40 years. I didn't even know there was such a thing as a caravan. Been coming.
We have millions of illegals. Look, here's my take. Legal immigration is fantastic. That's how this country was built. My relatives came here legally. Yours probably did too. It's illegal immigration that needs to be slowed down and stopped. But I don't think a wall's going to do that. I think a wall sets a bad precedent. China built a wall. The Soviet Union built a wall around Berlin. They knocked that down. It sends a bad message. We've got technology right now that we can put up that will do the same thing as a wall, and it won't look that way. You can put lasers up all across the border. And instantly, if somebody crosses one, you're going to know. Every 500 feet, put up a couple little observation towers. Have more people along the border. For the money you're going to spend to build a wall, $5 billion, you can hire more people to be out there. But we've got the technology to detect people. Like you just said, we know when they're building tunnels. You can see right under the ground. You don't need an ugly wall to stop that. You really don't. Let's go to Annie in Alabama. Annie, what's on your mind?
Thank you, George. Well, maximum security prisons have a tall anchor fence with razor wire across the top, and I hear very few news stories about people that get over that. And the officers want it so you can see through it so they can see what's going on. That's what Border Patrol has said.
Yeah, they want to know what's going on, and you're not going to be able to do that with a wall.
No, they want something they can see through, so I think a razor wire fence would be the answer. Maybe they can all agree on that.
Lasers all across with high technology would work.
That's what they're using to keep thousands of people locked up.
Put some of those little pet things. You know how you put those things around a pet? Where if they walk over the line, they get zapped a little bit and they jump back.
You can't do that. It'll hurt the birds.
Well, we don't want to hurt the birds. No, I'm not saying put it underground or something.
Oh, all right. As long as the birds are not underground.
They've got the kind of technology. Anyways, what's going on?
Well, Doug Jones is a United States Senator from Alabama, and according to AL.com, it said on there, I read it last night, that Doug Jones had voted for something like $25 billion for this border security earlier, and it didn't pass.
$25 billion?
It's on AL.com. I read it last night. That's it said that Doug Jones, he was a U.S. Senator, and he's a Democrat.
That's a lot of money, Annie.
And then he voted for that before. However, it didn't pass, and now they're trying to pass another one.
All right. Well, let's come back with some final open line calls, fast hours. So those of you who are ready to make the call, a couple lines just popped up open. Make the call. We'll be back. Okay, welcome back to our open line portion. By the way, Ian Punnett going to sit in for me tomorrow, and he'll also be on Saturday, and then George Knapp on Sunday, and I shall be back on Monday as we get rolling along. A few more weeks, we'll be into Feb. That is unbelievable. Let's go to the phones. Rudy is in Seven Lakes, North Carolina. Welcome to the program. Hi, Rudy.
Hey, George. How you doing? Good morning.
Good. Good morning to you, too.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I was born in 75, never really grew up on Buddy Holly. I heard some of his music. It does sound like how the Beatles sound.
Yeah.
I love the Beatles. The Beatles sound really good. I have one question. What do you think about that song? The song is called Buddy Holly and the group is called Weezer.
Interesting song. I think I've heard it like one time. It's not one of those songs you want to remember and sing again, but it's interesting about Buddy Holly itself.
Right.
Did you like it?
I like it. It's catchy. It's a feel good music song.
Yes, it sure is.
Yeah, and that's all I had. I just wanted to.
All right, my friend. Drive carefully out there.
Thank you.
Okay. Text and tweets. Tom, what do you have for us?
Hey, this one from Clarissa in Fresno, California. Do you think it's possible ETs don't visit anymore? It just seems like there aren't classic cases such as Roswell, Kecksburg, or Lonnie Zamora.
I think that they're still out there. We're just not getting those kind of cases that we used to get in the old days.
Yeah, the high-profile ones.
They were classic. The Lonnie Zamora case, the Roswell case, the Barney and Betty Hill abduction case. We don't get those anymore.
Even the Phoenix Lights.
I wonder why they stopped. I mean, we're still being visited, but I guess they're leaving people alone or something.
Just being low-key.
Low-key. Until.
Low-key.
Mike's in Cleveland, Ohio. Welcome to the program, Michael. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, George.
Hi there.
I hear you don't like a wall, but the thing is when they get on the side of the United States territory property, they can claim asylum, and then they go through the legal process, which drains our resources.
Well, then we got to change that.
But what if President Trump made it like they have free trade zones? What if he made it like an immigration zone, like 2 miles away from the border, where you have 2 miles, and if they're in within 2 miles, say they go across the wall or under a fence, where they just say, well, you don't have any asylum status, and they deport them right back to their country of origin.
I'm all for legal. I'm not for illegal. But we need something. I just think a wall just sends a bad message. You know,
it does, because you know what if a CME happens in the United States and we want to go south?
You never know.
Thanks, George. Have a wonderful weekend.
Yep, you too. Be well. Linda's in Auburn, Washington. Welcome to the program. How far are you from Everett, Linda?
I'm about 60 miles, I'd say. I'm at the south end of Seattle.
Come out to our show if you can.
Well, I'll try. If I can find the money, I'll do it.
If we can talk Tom into giving you a discount.
Yeah, I got to get Tommy to hand me over some money. Maybe I should stand next to him in the grocery line.
He would do that. You know, that's what he does. Isn't that amazing?
I know. He's kind.
And he picks out somebody, and then he goes up to the cashier and says, I'm paying for that person here, and off they go. And I just told Tom, I hope the cashier really does pay for it and doesn't keep it.
You never know.
You never know.
I used to buy groceries at Thanksgiving, turkeys and all the trimmings, and put them on the porch of a house that looked all dilapidated and looked like the people were poor. I'd take all the groceries and set them on the porch and then run off.
Good for you. Did you ever kind of sit in the background and look at their faces when they came out?
Yeah, I waited, but I didn't wait too long because I didn't want them to see me.
But that's good-hearted.
I should have done that. I hope they all got the food that they needed that they couldn't buy for themselves.
When I give some money to homeless people, I just really like to see their face light up. To me, that's worth it.
I know. I just pulled up to a intersection last night, and I forgot my purse was in the trunk of my car. I had gone walking in our super mall. It's like a big track area, indoor mall. And I forgot my purse was there, and I pulled up to the intersection, and this boy was standing there without a coat in this cold weather with a sign. And I happened to have a coat in my trunk. So I asked him if he needed a coat, and he said yes. So I said, well, get in my trunk. There's one in my trunk. So I opened my trunk. He could have grabbed my purse, but he didn't. He didn't. And he was so thankful. And I told him, I'm sorry, I don't have any money to give you. And he said, that's fine. He said, this coat is beautiful. I can really use it. And it was one of my coats, and he's a boy.
Did it look like a woman's coat?
It looked kind of unisex like.
Yeah, so he could get away with it.
He could get away with it, and it had a nice hood. And so
good for you.
At least he's warm.
There's a place in heaven for people who help other people.
Well, I don't know if I want to go to heaven, but that's a personal
What do you
story.
Mean? If you don't want to go to heaven, where do you want to go?
I want to make heaven my world.
Interesting. You don't want to go to hell, right? If there is one.
Of course not.
All right.
Of course.
So you don't want to go to heaven, but you want to create your own heaven.
Yes, I want to create my paradise here. You know, just kind of like cleaning up the world, getting rid of the evil energies and all the fear, and just making my world heaven. I don't want to go up in some heaven where you can't have hamburgers or pizza or drive fancy cars or, you know, I don't want anything like that.
You want to have fun down here, huh?
Yeah, I want to have fun down here, but I want to be able not to worry about thieves and liars and etc.
I don't blame you. Thanks. Let's go to Harry, first-time caller in Brooklyn, New York. Hello there, Harry.
Hello, my friend. How are you
today?
Okay,
wonderful. How are things in New York? How cold is it up that way?
It's starting to get a little cold. We're going to get a little sprinkle of snow. And then possibly Saturday we're supposed to get a storm.
Oh,
so
boy.
It's finally arriving.
Yeah, I got blasted last week in St. Louis and just got out. I didn't think I was going to. Got to Denver, did our TV shows, and then I'm back in L.A. It hasn't stopped raining since I've been back. Every day.
Well, better rain than snow.
Yeah, that's true, and they needed the rain, but, I mean, I want to see some sun.
Yeah, I hear you.
I'm
going out early this morning to go shopping before the storm hits.
A big,
so hopefully
big.
I'll get back early.
How many inches of snow are they expecting?
Well, now it's only going to be a sprinkle, but Saturday they said about 3 inches and up.
Will that shut the city down?
No, I don't think so.
All right, that's good.
I don't think so. It may slow things down a little, but nothing can shut down New York City.
That's true. Nothing. They've tried to.
I've been in snowstorms that were 15 inches and up. In some places, 30 inches with the drifts. And we still kept going. You know, it just took a little couple of days for the trains and buses to start running again. But what I wanted to say was that the lady that was just on, I lived in hell. I know. I was homeless. And now I'm living in heaven. Because now I have a place.
What turned you around, Harry? What was that moment that turned things around for you?
Well, what it was that I had gotten involved with some agency that helped the homeless.
Okay.
And they were able to get me an apartment.
Really?
I, of course, you know, from a middle-class family, who would have thought years, you know, later that I would be homeless? But unfortunately, I was doing a lot of drinking, and, you know, that didn't help. And the more I was on the streets, the more I drank. I don't drink anymore. It's been a few years. I'm a recovering alcoholic.
So do you think it was your lifestyle that put you in that position?
Yes.
You lost everything?
Yes.
And then you're slowly coming back, I guess? You're building yourself back up?
Oh yeah, I've been on my own right now for 10 years. I've had an apartment for 10 years.
Good for you.
In a nice neighborhood. You know, I'm back on track.
Good
again.
For you. How old are you, Harry?
I'm 69.
Well, you're still young. That's still young.
I haven't had a drink in 4.5 years.
If you had one drink, what would happen? Would you fall off the wagon again?
Oh yeah, one drink wouldn't do it. I'd have to have 1,000.
But, I mean, could you stop at one? Probably not, I bet.
No, I don't think I could. But what would happen is the disease would just progress more
sure.
and more.
Well, keep doing what you're doing. You're doing it the right way.
Oh, yeah, I'm very happy. You know, I'm sober, and I'm very happy about it. And, you know, I have been to AA meetings for many years, so I know what I have to do to stay sober. You know, I have that knowledge, and it's been working for me. You know, I just used all the knowledge that I learned through all the years, and now I'm applying it.
Must be rough to be homeless.
It was very rough. Like I said, I was living in hell. It was bad, and I just kept on drinking because I didn't want to think about
it. Made the pain go away, didn't it?
Exactly. Only later on it caused even more pain. But you know, it's like an instant fix.
Yep.
You know, that's what it is. It's just an instant fix.
But then when you come down, you feel worse, don't you?
Oh yeah, definitely.
So you got to drink more.
I was out there panhandling and everything. I was a homeless veteran. I was in all kinds of shelters, homeless places, detoxes, rehabs, you name it. I was in them all.
Did you find people, Harry, generally were good to you?
Yes, they were. There were some people, of course, that were cruel. There were some people that would laugh. But most of the people, they either ignored you or they throw you a couple of dollars to help you out.
What was the most somebody gave you at one time?
$20.
Did it shock you?
Yes. Because I was used to getting maybe a dollar or two
or
some change. But this guy was, you know, I said, you know what you just gave me? You gave me $20. He says, yeah, I know. He says, I was where you were at. I'm a veteran too. So he was a homeless veteran too, so he understood. So anytime, like yourself, when I see somebody homeless on the street, I make sure I help them out a little bit.
As much as you can.
Yeah, and I tell them, you know, yeah, well, I don't get much. I'm on a fixed income, but whatever I can help them. But I tell them, I said, listen, this is to get something to eat, not to get something to drink.
Good for you. And how's your health now?
My health is okay. I'm hanging in there. It could be better, but when I stopped drinking, my health, of course, got a lot better.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, but what I wanted to say was that as far as, you know, them going on the plane, all those guys,
because
it was very sad, Dion was doing, they had some kind of a show on TV, I think it was biography
mm-hmm.
or something, and they would, you know, get somebody who was famous and they would interview them. And Dion I'm watching TV and he happened to just be on at the time. I was a big fan. My mother worked for Laurie Records, which was his production, you know, where he worked.
Right.
And then he went over to Columbia when he left Dion and the Belmonts. And he went over to Columbia on his own. He did The Wanderer, did his own thing, and he became famous for being himself on his own. But my mother worked for Laurie Records, and then she went to Columbia when he went, and she met him there too. So it was, you know, I had a little feeling about him. You know what I mean? It was some connection, even though I never met him. And I hear him talking on this show, and he said, and it's true what Gary said. They asked him to flip a coin to see who was going to go on the plane. And he flipped the coin, and whoever it was went.
Richie Valens ended up going.
Yeah, I think that he was the one. And Dion, because he was poor, and he had a gig with these guys in the other, wherever they were going. I forgot where it was, Texas or somewhere.
They're going to Minnesota.
Minnesota, okay. And he had a gig with them. And he was, you know, he was scheduled to be there in a couple of days, too, with them.
It was an amazing story. Hey, the clock has got us. We'll be doing more open lines all the time. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.